This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 9955 kilohertz, Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be, 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
You're listening to the Hour of the Time, and I'm Michelle. Before we begin today's program, I would like to remind the listening audience that the Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading, specialists in precious metals, non-confiscatable and non-reportable hard assets. If you have not yet made that call to Swiss America to ask them how they can help you preserve your assets against the future impending economic collapse, don't hesitate any longer, my friends, to call them. Swiss America has stood by the Hour of the Time through thick and thin for many, many years. They deserve your sponsorship, and they can help you. Call them and speak with one of their experts. Tell them you're a listener to the Hour of the Time, and they'll put you in touch with a representative of their company who works with Hour of the Time listeners, and they'll give you red carpet treatment every single time. Call today. Swiss America Trading, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Swiss America Trading.
The heads are up, the chests are out, the arms are swinging in cadence count. Sound off, 1-2, sound off, 3-4, ten count. 1-2, 3-4, 1-2. 3-4. I had a good home when I left. You're right. You had a good home, but you left. You're right. Jody was there when I left. You're right. And Jody was there when you left. You're right. Sound low. 1-2. Sound low. 3-4. 10 counts. 1-2. 3-4. 1-2. out the door. Sound off, 1, 2, sound off, 3, 4, in count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's program is a salute to the patriotic music of America. That brief selection you just heard is from a very rare album. It was released in the 1950s by Child's Craft Encyclopedia and is called Patriotic Songs and Marches for Children. I recently encountered a public school where the children no longer recite the Pledge of Allegiance at all. Twice a week, the principal reads the Pledge of Allegiance over the intercom into the classrooms. But the children are not encouraged to stand by the side of their desks, place their hand over their heart, and pledge the flag. This simply is not done. And I thought it would be appropriate, given the state of the nation today, to collect some of this wonderful patriotic American music and some of the stories about it in an episode of The Hour of the Time, if for no other reason than to make it available to our children later on so they can remember these things and appreciate our great musical heritage, which celebrates our freedom. I'd like to open this evening's program with a rousing rendition of Yankee Doodle. The irony of Yankee Doodle, the first great American popular song, and still a popular favorite, is that it may have been conceived as a mockery of the American colonial soldiers. One of the most common legends about the tune attributes its authorship to a surgeon attached to the British Army at Albany during the French and Indian Wars, who was so bemused by the ragamuffin appearance of the colonial troops attached to his regiment that he composed this mocking little ditty sometime in the 1750s. It soon became a popular British taunt, and even the colonials took to singing it, not realizing that the joke was on them. Supposedly, when Colonel Hugh Percy's troops marched out of Boston in April 1775 on their way to Lexington and Concord, they kept step to the strains of Yankee Doodle. But the colonials had the last laugh. As the British beat a hasty retreat, the victorious Americans followed, singing a gleeful rendition of the tune. This arrangement is performed by the Boston Pops Orchestra.
Thank you.
The close ties between Great Britain and the United States have long been strengthened by one unassailable link. God Save the Queen and America share the same tune. Though its melodic origins are obscure, by 1745, the British version had already become England's national anthem. Then it was God Save Great George, Our King. By the time of the Revolution, the colonists were making up all sorts of patriotic variations. God Save George Washington, Our 13 States, America. The words Americans sing today were written in 1831 by Samuel Francis Smith, a Boston minister, for a children's 4th of July celebration.
Thank you.
few composers or conductors have delved as deeply into the American idiom as Morton Gould. His brief symphonic work, American Salute, which he wrote in the early 1940s, is a brilliantly orchestrated version of the Civil War song When Johnny Comes Marching Home, one of the finest from our legacy of American popular airs. The tune is unusual in its minor quality, which gives a bittersweet tang to the martial phrases. Gould has accented the bittersweet by making it brilliant and accented the sardonic by making it snappy. The American Salute, a cross between a concert overture and a symphonic march, is in the form of a theme and variations, with the theme always recognizable and the mood always stirring.
Thank you.
most modern-day listeners probably know American Patrol through the swing version by Glenn Miller and his orchestra that was first popularized in 1942. But the piece had been around for more than 50 years before the trombonist adapted it. Written for piano by Frank W. Meacham in 1885, it was soon orchestrated and became a favorite at concerts of the military bands so common around the turn of the century. One reason could well have been Meacham's inclusion of several familiar and beloved American themes, including Columbia, the Gem of the Ocean, Dixie, and Yankee Doodle in the fabric of the piece. After Miller's instrumental success with the tune, lyricist Edgar Leslie, who also wrote the words for Me and My Gal, Among My Souvenirs, and many other songs, added the words that turned it into the World War II work entitled We Must Be Vigilant. This is American Patrol.
Irving Berlin,
wrote God Bless America during World War I for Yip Yip Yaphank, an all-soldier show that he created at Camp Yaphank on Long Island, New York. But he cut it from the score because he didn't think it was appropriate for the scene in which it was to be sung. It lay neglected in his songwriter's trunk for 20 years until Kate Smith, planning a radio program for Armistice Day, asked him to write a new patriotic song for her. Berlin tried, but was unhappy with all of his efforts. Then he remembered the song he had written in 1918. Kate sang it on the radio for the first time on November the 10th, 1938, and it met with overwhelming enthusiasm. The following year, Berlin assigned all of the royalties to the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts of America, proceeds they continue to receive today. His reason? He didn't want to capitalize on this expression of gratitude that he, as an immigrant, felt for the United States. This is God Bless America, sung by Kate Smith. As the Austrian composer Johann Strauss, Jr. is called the Waltz King, so, and for equal reason, is America's own John Philip Sousa, known as the March King. And if any one march offers explanation for that title, it must surely be his masterpiece, The Stars and Stripes Forever. Sousa composed it while returning by ship from Europe, swept up in a surge of patriotic nostalgia, and guided, he said, by divine inspiration. The three themes of the final trio were meant to typify the three sections of the United States. The broad melody, or main theme, represents the North. The famous piccolo obbligato is the South, and the bold counter melody of the trombones recalls the West. Sousa penned the piece on Christmas Day, 1896, presumably in his hotel suite in New York after the boat had docked. Of its salty flavor and the images it conjures up of an American battle fleet slicing through surging waves, the stirring march Anchors Away was actually composed for a football game, although a naval one at that, and for 20 years was associated only with football. The game was the 1906 Army-Navy encounter, and the composer was Charles A. Zimmerman, the musical director of the Naval Academy. The lyricist was Alfred H. Miles, a member of the Academy's class of 1907. In 1926, the year the song was officially adopted by the Navy, another midshipman, Royal Lovell, wrote additional words for it. This is Anchors Away for the U.S. Navy.
Thank you.
For a number of years, John Philip Sousa was widely thought to have composed The Caissons Go Rolling Along, a tribute to the artillerymen who hit the dusty trail as the caissons go rolling along. The attribution was due to the publication in 1918 of the U.S. Field Artillery March, listing the March King as composer. Actually, Sousa's version was only an arrangement of a march that had been composed 11 years earlier by Edmund L. Gruber, a career army officer, for a reunion in the Philippine Islands of two long-separated units of the 5th Field Artillery Regiment. A post-World War II adaptation turned Gruber's tune into The Army Goes Rolling Along, which was subsequently designated the official song of the United States Army. Possibly the most surprising revelation in all march literature is that Jacques Offenbach, who first put the champagne bubbles into Parisian comic opera, was responsible for the music of the Marines Hymn. Of course, Offenbach didn't call it that when he wrote it for an operetta entitled Genevieve de Brabant. Apparently around 1918, an operetta-loving leatherneck put the tune and its now familiar words saluting the United States Marines together. The two references in the opening lines are to Marine victories. The Halls of Montezuma celebrates the Mexican War of 1846 to 1848, and the Shores of Tripoli refers to the four-year military action against North African Barbary pirates that ended in 1805. Easily the most recent of the classic United States military songs is one that was known to every child growing up in America during World War II as Off We Go Into the Wild Blue Yonder. It was written in 1939 by Robert M. Crawford, a member of the music faculty at Princeton, for a contest sponsored by Liberty Magazine to find a song for the newly formed Army Air Corps, and was known at that time as the Army Air Corps Song. In accordance with the changes the years have brought, the song and the Corps are now known as the U.S. Air Force.
Oh,
Although she had been to Europe many times, Catherine Lee Bates, a professor at Wellesley College in Massachusetts, had never seen much of her native country. So in 1893, she attended the Columbian Exposition in Chicago and then traveled on to Colorado Springs. One day, she ventured to the top of nearby Pikes Peak. She was overcome by the view from the summit, and that night wrote the first draft of a poem, America the Beautiful. It was published 2 years later in a magazine called The Congregationalist. In 1913, her poem was set to music, to a melody written in the 1880s by one Samuel A. Ward of Newark, New Jersey, for the hymn, O Mother Dear Jerusalem. So stirring and popular was the resulting song that it was serious competition for the Star Spangled Banner when a national anthem was finally selected in 1931. This is America the Beautiful.
Thank you.
On the morning of September 13, 1814, during the War of 1812, Francis Scott Key boarded a British warship in Chesapeake Bay under a flag of truce. His mission was to secure the release of a civilian taken prisoner during the British evacuation of Washington, D.C. But once aboard, he was unable to leave because the fleet had begun its attack on Fort McHenry. When the smoke had cleared the following morning, Key looked at the fort to discover that it had not surrendered. He began scribbling a poem and completed it by the time he got to shore. Sung to an English drinking song, to Anna Creon in Heaven, his poem became popular immediately, although the Star Spangled Banner didn't become our national anthem until more than a century later, in 1931. Your homework assignment is to find a book of English literature and locate the third stanza of the Star Spangled Banner written by Francis Scott Key, for we only sing three stanzas of his poem in our national anthem, and he wrote four. This is our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner.
Thank you.
the Battle Hymn of the Republic. Julia Ward Howe wrote the words for this stirring tune during the Civil War in the process of creating one of the most enduring of patriotic songs. She had heard the melody sung by Union soldiers in Washington, D.C. one day in 1861. The tune was drawn from an old Methodist hymn, possibly written by one John William Steffi, and originally titled, "Say, Brothers, Will You Meet Us?" The soldiers were singing words called "John Brown's Body," probably thinking the song referred to the militant anti-slavery leader who staged the famous raid at Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. The John Brown referred to was actually an Army sergeant stationed at a fort in Massachusetts. The Atlantic Monthly published Mrs. Howe's lyric, paying her $5, and history took care of the rest. We will join the Battle Hymn of the Republic in progress, taking us up to the top of the hour. And may God bless each and every one of you, and God bless our Republic.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Thank you. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried by WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 99.55 kHz, Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We regret the inability of the Hour of the Time to broadcast yesterday at its regular time. We were experiencing extremely high winds, intermittent power surges, and power outages, and this studio is not equipped to handle that type of situation. Be sure and tune in later this evening for the Home Satellite Show with Dan Morgan. That's at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific Standard Time.
Good evening. You're listening to the Hour of the Time, and I am your temporary hostette, Michelle. For those of you who are regular listeners to this program, you know that many hours have been devoted to discussing economic collapse, its likelihood, probability, its inevitability. Tonight, we're going extremely controversial material that will involve what you must do to prepare to survive after the economic collapse. As in other programs that I've done regarding training, this material is approximately 20 years old, so you must listen to it and take very good notes and listen for broad principles that are applicable to a variety of circumstances and conditions. So you'll have approximately 3 minutes here to get paper and pencil by your side. You're going to need it. And then we'll continue with this evening's program, Defending Your Retreat, a manual after the collapse.
Thank you. This ain't no party. This ain't no disco. This ain't no fooling around. This is Defending Your Retreat. Roman numeral 1. Introduction. What you are about to hear may seem shocking. Our country is currently headed on a course that may completely change life in America as we know it. Very soon, our basic survival may depend on our ability to defend our possessions, families, and homes. There are many that feel the impending economic collapse will be accompanied by a neat, lawful, and calm period of economic adjustment. If they are correct, then the need for information such as this does not exist. However, they are playing poker with the biggest stakes of all, their lives. I would far rather be too well prepared than face the future defenseless. The events of 1977 in New York City during the power shortage are an omen of what we can expect during a period of extended economic crisis. How would you defend your possessions against organized bands of looters? Could you survive without police protection? It is neither the purpose nor intention here to explain or detail the economic disaster that awaits us. I assume that if you were not concerned with the frightening prospects of our future, you would not be listening to this program. If this information sounds militaristic, it is intended to be so. Even the greatest preparations for the future will be to no avail if you are not able to defend and protect what you have saved. The background of the writer of this manual includes graduating from one of our country's military academies and combat experience in Vietnam. Many of the comments and suggestions that you will hear are drawn from both his military training and observations. Some of the material here has been taken from an impeccable source, U.S. military training manuals. The writer has, however, attempted to separate the vital and necessary information from that which has no relevance. If you will study and put into effect many of the ideas contained here, you will greatly increase your chances for survival. Roman numeral 2. Does this all sound extreme? I can imagine some prospective retreater hearing these words and wondering how paranoid I must be. Let me answer the question to save you the time worrying. Your time will be much better spent preparing for the coming collapse. It is my personal conviction that we should prepare for the worst and feel very fortunate if it does not occur. Is it imprudent to have a fire extinguisher in your home, even though the possibility of a home fire is actually very remote? Unfortunately, the days ahead of us may be very severe. For every one family that prepares for the coming calamity, perhaps 1,000 or more will not. When these unprepared individuals begin to run out of food, is there any limit to their struggle for survival? Your survival will depend on your ability to protect what you have. The large number of state and federal armories scattered around the country may at first seem a blessing. In the long run, however, they may constitute the ultimate threat to our existence at the retreat. When controlled and supervised, the weapons in these armories increase our country's strength and prevent widespread civil disorder, sometimes. In the advanced stages of the inflationary panic that seems to be coming, the government, both state and federal, will most likely lose control over the National Guard and many federal troops. As the dollar loses more value each day, troops will eventually refuse to serve when paid only with worthless paper money. As civil disorder begins, the troops must decide whether to defend their homes and families or yours. Guess what they will decide? As a byproduct, they will take home with them, or allow to fall into the wrong hands, vast quantities of automatic weapons, ammunition, grenades, mortars, and even armored vehicles. How ridiculous would your defensive preparations seem against heavily armored looters assaulting your position for food? What is the answer? As I see it, we must make every possible preparation for defense consistent with our abilities and finances. Given the prospect of attacking a well-prepared defense position, your attackers may soon give up this folly and move down the road to attack someone else. Roman numeral 3, defending your retreat. The single most important criteria of all is to ensure the retreat you select is defendable. Your defense may simply be its isolation, its physical preparations such as barbed wire or entrenchments, or a combination of the two. Remember, however, even the most thoroughly prepared and vigorously defended retreat may not survive repeated assaults from heavily armed and determined bands of looters in a highly populated area. Conversely, the most isolated retreat may fall to a single looter unless basic security precautions are taken. Basically, stay as far away from the population centers as possible. As food begins to disappear from the supermarket shelves, roaming bands of thugs and looters will gradually begin the attrition process. The weak and unprepared in the major urban areas will be the first victims of the collapse. The more agrarian and remote cities and towns will be spared the violence initially. However, our interstate highway system and modern communication systems will soon spread the disorder over most of the country. It is assumed that your retreat is somewhat isolated, or at least away from the major urban areas. Not all of the suggestions here are appropriate for every application. You should, however, find enough to greatly improve the defenses of your selected site. Roman numeral 4. Never retreat alone. To a certain extent, there is safety to be found in numbers. A well-defended retreat of several families is less likely to be attacked than that of a single family. Only if you have the protection of total isolation, deep in the North Woods or the Arizona desert, etc., should a single family retreat be considered. One person can only remain on guard duty so long. Even a well-armed single family would be overwhelmed in a short time by the coordinated attack of only lightly armed looters. Multiple family retreats offer the following advantages. 1. Cooperation in instituting a coordinated and well-prepared defensive system that would not be possible for the single family. 2. Sharing of the tasks of defense, hunting, food preparation, housekeeping, farming, etc. And 3. The potential of attracting qualified medical personnel to the established retreat. And this is most important. Roman numeral 5. What about your neighbors? In some respects, the best neighbors to have at your retreat are none. The fewer people that are in an area, the less reason an armed group of looters would want to go there. Looters and other parasitic creatures will prey on those that have neither the knowledge, weapons, or will to defend themselves. If the area of your retreat contains large numbers of unprepared people, it will attract looters just like bees to honey. An area of fiercely independent people that are willing to protect what they have saved may be an ideal neighborhood. Two or more retreats in close proximity linked by CB radios may be able to offer mutual support in case of attack by a numerically superior force. It may be worth consideration. Roman numeral 6. Types of attacks. Mr. Mel Tappan, in his excellent book, Survival Guns, published in 1976, lists the four most common types of attacks to expect. 1. Exposed attack. This will probably be the most common type of attack. Looters and other rabble simply rush your position with little coordinated or accurate firing. If you have chosen and prepared your defensive position well, and if you are suitably armed, you should expect to defeat a force 10 or more times your strength. Your sentries or scouts should give ample warning of the impending attack. 2. The stealth blitz. One of the most dangerous forms of attack to the defenders. The attacking force, which may be quite small, uses the cover of darkness to sneak up and overpower your sentries. Simultaneous entry may be made at several different points. This type of attack may be successfully defended against by alert sentries and adequate warning systems. 3. Fire blitz. This is probably the most dangerous form of attack to the defenders. The only viable response is frequently to escape your dwelling via a hidden and hopefully secure means. This type of attack occurs when a usually superior force surrounds your retreat and simultaneously firebombs it and hoses it with automatic weapons fire. The only possible defense is to have a clear field of fire in all directions to prevent the enemy approaching your position and or remote-controlled anti-personnel explosive charges that may be detonated from inside the retreat. 4. Scouting attack. A small advance party is sent ahead of the main body of attackers to test the strength of the defenders. By exposing themselves to your fire, they will attempt to determine the range and depth of your defensive fire. If your defenses are reasonably strong, a viable response may be to respond only with deliberately ineffective fire, such as shotguns, pistols, .22 caliber rimfire, etc., in an attempt to lure the main body into a frontal assault. Roman numeral 7. Chain of command. The person in your retreat with the most military experience should be put in complete charge of all activities pertaining to the defense of your compound. From a central observation or command bunker, he should direct, via radio if possible, and coordinate all offensive and defensive combat operations. There is only room for one boss. Select him wisely and follow him well. Roman numeral 8. Guards are a must. One of the greatest dangers to your retreat is the surprise attack. In the smaller one or two family retreats, it becomes impossible to keep a guard on duty constantly. This inherent problem is one reason that multiple family retreats are safer. The greatest danger from surprise attack comes at night. The absence of an alert guard may make your retreat vulnerable to even a lone attacker. Smaller retreats must rely heavily upon protective barbed wire, guard dogs, and even geese to give warning of an attack. Larger retreats should assign approximately twice the guard force at night as during the day. During daylight hours, your guard force may be kept to a minimum. With darkness, however, the danger of attack increases substantially. In Vietnam, the greatest danger of attack came during the evening hours. The fortified outposts that the Marines and Special Forces established in the Vietnamese villages are an excellent study model. The problems they faced are similar to what we may expect to confront at a retreat. In preparing the defensive positions at your retreat, the following priorities should be established. 1. Clear fields of fire and remove objects that limit observation. 2. Prepare adequate communication and observation systems, visual, CB radios, walkie-talkies, and so forth. 3. Prepare individual shelters, storage facilities, and weapon emplacements. 4. Design and install barbed wire obstacles and barricades. 5. Plan for the concealment or camouflage of all defensive positions. Roman numeral 9. To shoot or not to shoot. As you watch a group of strangers approach your retreat, an important decision must be made. Militarily, you do not want to allow any strangers to approach and enter your retreat. To do so would compromise and weaken the effectiveness of your defense. As the group approaches, you should have established a deadline beyond which no one may approach without securing permission. Anyone that is so warned and refuses to heed your warning must be treated as an enemy. Roman numeral 10. Communications. Communication is a vital ingredient in coordinating the defense of your retreat. The advent and development of the CB radio has been of major interest to the retreater. Low-cost, portable CB radios may be used to arm all patriots, lookouts, scouts, and so forth with instant communications. CBs are not private, however, a potential enemy may just as easily monitor all your messages once they discover the channel you are using. Remember, never discuss codes, ciphers, or the organization of your frequency changes over the CB radio. One security solution may be to see if crystals may be secured for all of your CB sets that allow them to operate either slightly above or below the regular frequencies. However, the FCC takes a very dim view of this idea. Try to lay in an adequate supply of batteries and standardize all CB units to use the same batteries. Roman numeral 11. Need for defensive lighting. As previously discussed, the hours from sunset to sunrise are the most dangerous time for the retreat. It is during this time that an enemy would most likely launch an attack. Darkness certainly favors the attacker. Some types of defensive lighting to locate the attackers is necessary. Floodlights or high-powered searchlights may at first seem to be the answer. They do, however, have certain limiting features that prevent them from being of use in most situations. These are, 1. They require a large power source that most likely will not be available in a survival situation. 2. Floodlights or high-power searchlights would easily be shot out by an enemy determined to attack your position. There are two solutions to the problem. They are, 1. Flares. The Army and Marines in Vietnam faced the same problem. The mortar-launched parachute flare proved to be an excellent solution. The extremely bright magnesium flares would light a very large area for a surprisingly long time. The hotly burning magnesium flare products produce updrafts that help the parachute stay aloft longer. The problem, of course, comes in when you try to obtain mortars and parachute flares. Though difficult and perhaps illegal to obtain now, there may be a time that they are available in the future. Keep them on your list. 2. Night vision devices. There are basically two types of night vision devices available, active and passive. A. Active. A light is emitted, such as infrared, and then viewed through a special viewer. The M1 infrared sniping system of the Korean War fame used this method. The major drawbacks are the bulky power packs required to operate the unit and the possibility that an enemy with an infrared viewer could easily locate your position from your light transmissions. B. Passive. A passive night vision system is most desirable because it emits no light. The passive device amplifies existing light levels, such as moonlight and starlight, several million times. During the Vietnam conflict, the writer of this manual used a night vision scope on many occasions to locate enemy sappers before they could approach the lines. A night vision scope mounted on a rifle, such as the M16, creates a potent weapon that seriously discourages an enemy from launching a night attack. Roman numeral 12. The use of binoculars and spotting scopes. Binoculars are a valuable tool for both offensive and defensive operations. Binoculars and spotting scopes allow you to identify potential targets at long distances before they become a threat to your retreat. They can also be used to identify friendly aliens to prevent accidents. All guards should have and utilize binoculars or high-powered spotting scopes. All patrols or hunting parties should utilize binoculars to search terrain for both game as well as enemy movement. Roman numeral 13. Sandbags. Sandbags are the basis for any and all defensive emplacements at your retreat. A properly protected position may be invulnerable to all types of small arms fire and most types of mortar fire. They owe their effectiveness to the fact that they absorb and cushion the incoming shot and shell without flying apart. Where wood splinters and concrete eventually cracks after enough hits, sandbags just continue to absorb the shock. Sandbags are, of course, no great secret. We have been using them for many years and through several wars. About the only improvement we have been able to make is producing the bags out of a synthetic material to prevent the eventual rot that occurred with canvas sandbags. When you have a choice, always choose the synthetic bags. Sandbags are not expensive and will last in storage, the synthetic ones anyway, indefinitely. They are released in large numbers on the surplus market and are relatively easy to locate. Do not be afraid to purchase large numbers of bags. A well-fortified retreat may utilize hundreds or even thousands of sandbags. As an added bonus, the filling of sandbags constitutes an excellent form of physical exercise. In Vietnam, it was common to spend at least 1 hour daily filling sandbags, and frequently much longer, when new emplacements were being constructed. Roman numeral 14. How good is your wire? Many good books with illustrations will give you explicit details on the proper procedure to establish a barbed wire perimeter at your defensive position. I encourage you to find those books and study them carefully. A word of caution, however, remember that even good barbed wire emplacements do not make your retreat impregnable. Your wire should never be used as an excuse to relax your alertness. The writer of this manual saw a Vietnamese Kit Carson scout, a former VC that crossed over, take only 2 minutes to cross a 60-foot barbed wire perimeter that had been considered impenetrable. While the number of Kit Carson scouts you may engage after the collapse are admittedly few, do take heed. Don't be lulled into a false sense of security. Roman numeral 15. Land mines. The proper use of land or anti-personnel mines will reduce the area of your perimeter that must be defended against land assault. They do, however, have several serious drawbacks. 1. Landmines are very hard to obtain. 2. The possession of landmines before an economic collapse would be a serious violation of federal law. A serious violation of federal law. 3. The inherent danger that they may be accidentally set off by members of your retreat is very great. Landmines and similar anti-personnel devices at this time are most definitely illegal. So educate yourself completely on this subject, including every aspect of the law. Roman numeral 16. Camouflage your strength. Whenever possible, keep the enemy wondering about the strength of your fortifications. Make it a firm rule not to allow strangers to enter your defensive compound. A potential enemy that is allowed to wander inside your wire may expose and later exploit a weakness in your defensive planning. This was a great problem in Vietnam. Almost every U.S. military security compound had a varying number of Vietnamese cooks, laundry girls, laborers, and so forth that were used for odd jobs around the camps. These same so-called peasants mapped out and reported entire defensive strong points and their weaknesses. Much of the success of the Viet Cong came from attacking isolated outposts and was due to a thorough knowledge of the perimeter before the attack. Use camouflage to conceal your defensive positions. Construct your fortifications so that a cursory examination of your perimeter with binoculars will not reveal all your positions. ladies and gentlemen, it is important to recognize that in the type of conflict we are describing tonight, this war will be won not by weapons, but primarily by wits. And what it is available for you to know by your five senses and by your intellect, you are responsible to know. And one of the things we know well from listening to this program is the absolute necessity of acquiring precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, in whatever configuration is right for you, your family, and your budget. It is with these precious metals that you will be able to buy food, transport, clothing, shelter, or perhaps purchase the life of a loved one when the currency that we now exchange is completely without value. Swiss America Trading is the sponsor of this program, and they have stood by this program through thick and thin. If you have not contacted them to thank them for their continuing and unwavering support, make that call tonight and ask them how they can help you protect what you have saved all these years with precious metals. There's no point in going to a retreat if you have nothing to protect. So call Swiss America Trading and speak to their representatives. Tell them you are faithful listeners to the Hour of the Time, and they will give you that red carpet treatment. They will be able to help you, regardless of the amount of money that you have to spend, and regardless of your condition or circumstance. The number is 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Swiss America Trading. Roman numeral 17. Escape routes. No fortress or defensive position devised by man has proved to be invincible. Given enough time, enough firepower, and enough supplies, your attackers can simply wait you out. While this may or may not be likely in a survival situation, the possibility of being surprised and overrun by a superior force is a real concern. The precautions we have mentioned can help you prevent this from happening, but errors do occur. Guards have been known to fall asleep. You might be attacked before all your defensive preparations have been made, and so forth. Make preparations for this contingency by determining the best escape route from your retreat in advance. Determine which defensive positions are necessary to cover the escape route and assign personnel and alternates to man them. Decide on a place of safety, away from your base camp, that the members of your retreat may gather to regroup. Make sure that all members of the retreat know how to find the regrouping location, especially during darkness. Roman numeral 18. Emergency caches. At key locations surrounding your retreat, you should bury critical survival material to be used in case of emergency. This equipment should include, but not be limited to, the following. 1. Spare weapons and ammunition. 2. Compact, dehydrated food and vitamins. 3. First aid and medical supplies. 4. Extra compasses and local maps. 5. Gold and silver coins for use for barter. 6. Spare clothing and other miscellaneous items that may be appropriate to your particular situation. The finest booklet ever written on the subject of burying items is called Methods of Long-Term Underground Storage. It should be consulted to ensure that the valuables you bury are protected against corrosion and the elements. Roman numeral 19. Emergency packs. Each man, woman, and child should always keep an emergency pack stocked and ready to take on a moment's notice. If you had to abandon your retreat with no notice, the contents of your pack may prove the difference between life and death. A well-stocked emergency pack should include the following articles. 1. Spare ammunition and an Armalite AR-7 survival rifle or other small, effective, lightweight firearm. 2. Compass and local maps. 3. Dehydrated food and vitamins, as well as eating utensils. 4. Fire-making equipment. 5. A tube tent and insulated thermal blanket. 6. Hunting knife. 7. Spare canteen. 8. Dry clothing, especially extra socks. 9. Miscellaneous personal items. Roman numeral 20. Topographic maps. Topographic maps are an absolute necessity. Unless you know where you are, you can never know where you are going. Topographic maps may be purchased for almost any area within the continental United States. By studying the topographic symbols, you can become familiar with the terrain without ever being there. Use it to plan escape routes, offensive sorties, etc. Roman numeral 21. Always be armed. Once you have established and occupied your retreat, a cardinal rule should be, never be more than arm's length from your weapon. The collapse of law and order, as we know it, if there really is such a thing, places the ultimate responsibility for personal protection with the individual. Unless you are properly armed constantly, you may fall prey to the first vagabond looter that comes along with a Sears 22 bolt-action rifle. The old frontier adage of putting on your gun at the same time you put on your pants has much merit. Each adult should wear a sidearm during all waking hours and keep it next to your bed, bunk, hammock, or sleeping bag at night. Each adult leaving the main security compound should be armed with an assault rifle in either the .223 or .308 caliber. That one trip you make outside the wire with only your sidearm may be the last trip you ever make. A great many parallels may be drawn between the present life of the white Rhodesian farmers in the outlying areas of Rhodesia and our projected living conditions at a retreat. The Rhodesian bush farmers are a very hardy group of men and women. Many a life has been saved because of their defensive practice of being constantly armed. Take heed. Roman numeral 22. Standardization of weapons. In a retreat situation, it becomes vital that all weapons be standardized to certain types and calibers. Standardization will accomplish the following. 1. Reduce the number of calibers that must be stocked. 2. Make it easier to stock spare parts for weapons. 3. Reduce the number of spare magazines that must be stored. And 4. Reduce the number of weapons that each person must be familiar with. Roman numeral 23. Ammunition. Adequate supplies of ammunition during a period of extended crisis will be a major problem. This may be partially solved by 1. Elimination of all unnecessary calibers and standardization on 5 basic types, that is, the .45 ACP, .308, .223, .22, and 12 gauge. 2. Reloading equipment, dyes, powders, and bullets. Good quality commercial or military ammunition may be stored almost indefinitely. Roman numeral 24. Establishing a ready room. A ready room, or alert area, should be established in the central portion of your defensive compound. You should keep here your main line defensive weapons, loaded magazines, and spare ammunition. All weapons should be cleaned and inspected regularly. Magazines should be rotated frequently to ensure the springs do not weaken. Roman numeral 25. Establish fields of fire. All members of your retreat should have access to and understand how to use a range card. A ranging card is drawn in advance to give a visual representation of the distances to key landmarks within your fields of fire. You should use these landmarks to accurately adjust your sights. This does away with the guesstimation of range and should provide greater accuracy throughout your entire field of fire. Roman numeral 26. The chainsaw. Since World War II, the self-contained, self-lubricating chainsaw has been developed to the point that it is a very valuable all-purpose tool. Of its many functions, the most notable are 1. Cutting trees for barricades, 2. Cutting lumber for construction, and 3. Cutting underbrush, small trees, and so forth to clear fields of fire. During the Vietnam conflict, the importance of the chainsaw was proven many times. Several units of the Marine Corps and Special Forces were issued and carried chainsaws as an important tool. It will be necessary to ensure that adequate stores of gasoline are available. Roman numeral 27. Need to have scout outs. Depending on the size of your retreat, there are many advantages to be gained from having one or more scouts outside your defensive perimeter during a time of potential trouble. These scouts, when armed with walkie-talkies, perform the following functions. 1. Give warning of an enemy attack. 2. Indicate the size and strength of the enemy force. 3. Harass the enemy by attacking his supplies, vehicles, communications, etc. 4. Perform duties as a sniper. 5. Attack the enemy from the flank and block his path of retreat. The principle of maintaining one or more scouts outside your perimeter is an old one. Most notably, the Chindits in Burma used it with great success to defend their forward fire bases against attack from the numerically superior Japanese forces. Roman numeral 28. Patrols and their weapons. Patrols will be of great importance to your retreat. They will be looking for potential threats to your retreat as well as hunting for game. The armament of these men is of great importance. Patrols should see that their weapons are complementary. Please note the following bad example. Both men on patrol are armed only with sidearms and scoped bolt-action hunting rifles, .308 or .30-06. While stalking game, they are suddenly confronted by three parasites armed with Sears .22 automatic rifles. Though you may drop one or even two of them with your first shots, bolt-action hunting rifles are slow to operate and impractical at close range. The chances of you surviving even this basic and simple confrontation are remote. The .22, while lacking in power, is deadly if you are hit with enough of them. Moral to this story? always have at least 50% of your patrol armed with light assault rifles. The remainder may be armed with heavy assault rifles, .308, or shotguns. In this manner, you can protect yourself, as well as hunt for deer, elk, squirrel, fowl, etc. Terrain is a very important factor in determining the proper armament for patrol. Wooded, heavily overgrown areas favor the .223 cartridge, while the wide open spaces of the West demand the long shooting .308. Roman numeral 29. What weapon at what range? All weapons have their strong points as well as their limitations. Always utilize your weapons to maximize their effectiveness. The following information gives an example of suggested weapon usage versus range. At 800 yards from your retreat, consider the M14, the G3 .308 or 7.62 mm, and the FAL. At 300 yards from your retreat, consider the .223, the AR-15, the AR-180, or the Mini-14. At 100 yards from your retreat, consider the Riot shotgun or the 12-gauge. The Riot shotgun, 12-gauge, is an extremely effective weapon for close combat range, less than 100 yards. Long-range patrols in Vietnam used 12-gauge pump shotguns on raids into Laos and Cambodia for several years. Several men bursting into an NVA campsite at dawn with Riot shotguns with 20-inch barrels or less would wreak utter destruction and completely demoralize any survivors against further resistance. Consider it one of your most important defensive weapons. From 100 to 300 yards, the .223 or 5.56 millimeter rifle is best. It is flat shooting and ideal to repulse a typical assault at medium ranges. Beyond 300 yards, the effectiveness and accuracy of the .223 declines rapidly. For these longer ranges, the .308 or the 7.62 NATO cartridge is vastly superior. The match grade M14 with a 9-power Redfield scope has proven accurate out to 800 yards. At that distance, you can begin sniping at the enemy long before they can return accurate fire. Roman numeral 30, cleanliness and your weapons. You cannot expect a dirty weapon to function reliably or shoot accurately. Weapons should be cleaned daily and inspected regularly. Be certain to include adequate supplies of lubricating oil, bore solvent, cleaning rods, brushes, etc. in your survival equipment. Roman numeral 31, weapons practice is vital. The finest weapons and arsenal are of no use if you do not know how to fire them. All adults and older children should practice with their weapons regularly. Younger children should be familiar with weapons and become accustomed to the sound of gunfire. At all times during the construction and preparation on your retreat, weapons should be worn. By the time the economic collapse occurs, your weapons should be old friends. Roman numeral 32, automatic weapons. Despite the volume of publicity that surrounds automatic weapons, they remain of questionable value during a survival situation. Controlled, highly accurate, semi-automatic fire is far more desirable alternative when ammunition is at a premium. Automatic weapons do have a place in conventional warfare. For defending a fixed perimeter against hordes of advancing armies, it would be invaluable. It is, however, doubtful that such a situation would occur in a retreat that could not be handled with controlled, semi-automatic fire. We have been discussing the means and methods of protecting and defending your retreat in the time of economic collapse. There remain yet five subjects you should consider and study well on your own. First, the wearing of bulletproof vests, preferably those lightweight ones made of Kevlar, similar to the models worn by the President of the United States. The need for protective headgear, preferably the current Israeli issue, which is made of a lightweight impact and bullet-resistant plastic. Consider also uniformity of clothing, the possible use of alternate identification, and improvised munitions. All of these things will be very important to you in a time when law and order as we have known it ceases to exist and it's every man for himself in the world. And don't forget to live always with prayer and consider these things with prayer, for your future will depend on it. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. God bless you and yours, and God save our republic.
This is the Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 9955 kHz, Monday through Friday night, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Stay tuned later at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 9 Eastern, for the Home Satellite Radio Show with Dan Morgan.
This is My Daddy Station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
We now return you to our regularly scheduled programming, All Oldies, Most of the Time.
One, two, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around 10 o'clock tonight. Put your glad flags up. Join me, we'll have some fun. Turn the clock right.